Welcome to the morning show today on WRCO Radio. Great to have in the studio Evan Ewing, a public health specialist with Richland County Health and Human Services. I was looking back, Evan, and you took over a couple of years ago. So we've been doing this a couple of years, but it doesn't seem like it's been that long.
I know, it's flown by. I think the first time I was on was July of 24, and we're almost approaching 2 years now. Yeah, so
crazy.
Yeah, it's wild.
Still like your job?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, especially the topics we're talking about today.
Lots of things to talk about as the weather gets nicer and we get a little bit more active. And are you already finding ticks, are you?
Yeah. We've heard just from some community work that I've done, people have reported finding them, especially in their pets. So when their dogs come in, they're like, oh, we've already found a bunch on our dogs. So they're definitely out and about, probably as early even this year, I would guess, maybe as in February when we had those warmer temps. I wouldn't doubt they were out at that time.
And that's something. So have you heard, is there a way to gauge, is this going to be a bad year for those kind of things?
Some of the data that I mentioned that Dane County Public Health, they recently put out an article talking about how they're up a significant percentage more at this time than last year. So this might be a rough year for them.
Ooh. What about mosquitoes and those kind of things? Have you heard much about how it's going to be this year?
Not so much with those. With those ones, just making sure that you don't have standing water in your yard. So just, you know, not leaving out like tires or things like that that can collect water. That's kind of an immediate step you could take just within your own environment.
So I did not know this, but it is Tick, Bite, and Lyme Disease Prevention Month. May is Lyme Disease Awareness Month. So your timing is great to be on the show today.
Yeah. I appreciate you having me on. People listening might be wondering, you know, why should we be worried about ticks, or maybe thinking, you know, Lyme disease really isn't something to be worried about. I don't want to worry people more than necessary, but in Richland County, we do have a high amount of Lyme disease present. For those that are listening that don't know what Lyme disease is, or maybe are not familiar with it, it's transmitted from ticks, specifically deer ticks, are also known as black-legged ticks, and it can cause a variety of symptoms that I'll kind of talk about in a little bit, but there's black-legged ticks, and then people are usually familiar with wood ticks, and those are unlikely to transmit Lyme, but they can transmit other bacterial infections. So just wanted to talk about some of the differentiating factors between some of the different types of ticks. So deer ticks, which I think most people are familiar with, when they're in their adult phase of life, they have that sort of orangish brown kind of crescent shape on their back, the adult females. And if you see one of those ones can spread disease. They have a few different life stages, but ticks in the nymph life stage, which would be the stage right before they become a full adult, and ticks in that adult female stage are the ones that primarily spread disease. Because in order to pass through those different life stages, they have to feed on blood, and that's how they get infected with that bacteria that can cause disease. So in different times of year, different life stages will be more active. So right now we would primarily find more adults active, but once we move more into the summer months, then those younger life stages will be more active. So kind of keeping an eye out for more of those really small ticks at that time. Male ticks can technically carry disease, but it's less likely that they'll transmit to humans because they don't feed as long as females do. So to identify the males, they don't have that orangish brown crescent shape on their backs. They actually have a shell that covers that. And so the females, that shell doesn't cover that full back because they feed on blood and get engorged, and they have to expand and get bigger than the males essentially. So that's the deer ticks to look out for. There's another type of tick called Lone Star ticks that have become kind of popular lately in the news with referring to alpha-gal syndrome, or the red meat allergy that they can cause. So Lone Star ticks are a little bit lighter in color than black-legged ticks or deer ticks, and they have a white dot on their back, and that's kind of why they get that name, Lone Star ticks. The alpha-gal syndrome is an allergy. Alpha-gal is a molecule that's naturally produced in the bodies of most mammals, but not in people, and it's also found in the saliva of some ticks. So when a tick bites, it can transfer that alpha-gal from its saliva into a person's blood, and then the human's natural defenses or immune system can identify that as a threat and then trigger an allergic reaction. So people don't really notice it until they eat red meat or exposed to other products made from mammals, like if they have alpha-gal syndrome. Because of that, that's why it's known as the red meat allergy. From what I've read, there's no established population yet in Wisconsin of the Lone Star tick, but the area that they have established is kind of right south of us, like Iowa, Illinois, stretching as far down as Texas, and then as far east as like going through Florida and up to Maine and just all of those states in between. So there's a map on UW Madison's website that shows some of the data where at least one Lone Star tick has been found in Wisconsin since 2004. And Richland is highlighted as one of those counties, but it suggests on the map that migrating birds from the south can bring them with them. So there's really no established Lone Star tick population in Wisconsin. So those are the main three that would be, could be present here: the wood ticks, the black-legged or deer ticks, and then the Lone Star tick. So the black-legged ticks are the ones, the deer ticks are the ones we probably should be most worried about at this time of year.
Can regular ticks give you Lyme disease as well, like a regular wood tick or not?
They're not typically. I think they, I was trying to research this a little bit. I think they technically can carry it, but I think it's uncommon. I think they would have other, they could transmit other bacterial infections. So wood ticks less likely or less to be worried about, more so those black-legged ticks.
And you mentioned identifying the male and the female. They're pretty small. You almost need a looking glass to identify the colors, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. The males you can, or the females you can kind of see, they would be easier to differentiate or identify. The males would be more difficult because I think they would look like other, might look like other bugs. They have eight legs, so that's kind of another way to help identify. They do make tick identification cards that you can get. We actually do have some at Health and Human Services as well. And some of the outreach that we're doing, we include those in some of that. So having one of those cards can be helpful if you do find a tick and want to figure out which type it is.
Indeed. And not every tick is going to give you Lyme disease, right? I mean,
correct.
That's the first thing. I'm a hypochondriac, so if I see one, it's like, oh, no, I got Lyme disease. But that's not always the case.
No, it's not. They have to be attached long enough. So typically with for Lyme disease, they have to be attached for at least 24 hours to transmit disease. So that's where if you do find one, let's say you haven't been outside at all the whole year, you go out once for a hike and you get a tick, and maybe within like an hour of coming inside, you find that on you. If you remove it right away, the chances of contracting Lyme would be pretty low. You know, if it would have to be engorged and be on your, it doesn't have to be engorged necessarily, but it would have to be attached for a long time.
Let's talk about environments where these ticks like to hang out.
Yeah, it's important, you know, we to be able to identify them, but also to know where they are as well and where they live. So I want to mention they don't jump or fly. So if you do find a bug on you that looks like a tick, and you go to touch it and it jumps right off your skin, it probably wasn't a tick. But they are really efficient at latching onto hosts. So they'll crawl to the edge of, leaves or blades of grass and just wait for someone to walk by, an animal or a human, and then brush up against them, and then they'll latch on. Deer are really big transporters. So that's why we have so many deer ticks in our region. They can be even in your backyard if you have deer present that, frequently travel through your backyard. So I grew up in town. We still had deer going through all the time. So, even if you're in town, it still helps to do some of the tick bite prevention measures, which we can talk about. But I've investigated cases that have been reported to us where people never left their yard and they'll still get a tick-borne illness. So they can be really anywhere that deer are, but typically they would be in, those dense grass and taller grass, those sort of areas.
But they can come in on your pets too.
Yeah. Right? Yep. That's a big one. So making sure that you check yourself and your pets. Even if your pet has a preventative, like the medicine, they might not bite your pet, but they could still be on their fur and bring them into the house. So really important to check your pets too.
Indeed. What about, you talked about Lyme disease. Are there other diseases that can come from the ticks?
Yeah. So another one that's, second in terms of how common it is in our area is anaplasmosis. So for anaplasmosis, ticks don't have to be attached quite as long to transmit that. So for that disease, it's 12 to 24 hours. That window's a little bit shorter. And when we look at signs and symptoms between Lyme and anaplasmosis, they're pretty similar except for the erythema migrans rash or the bullseye rash that is typically associated with Lyme disease. This occurs in about 70 to 80% of cases. And if you notice it, it'll expand in size over a period of days or weeks. So that erythema migrans is not a reaction to the tick bite on your skin, like actually like biting through the flesh. It's more of a reaction to, or an outward sign of actual Lyme disease infection in your skin. So when that rash first appears, Lyme disease has likely just started to spread through your body and it's still more localized. Some of the symptoms that are similar between anaplasmosis and Lyme would be those like flu-like symptoms, like high fever. We've had cases where the fevers push 104, so really high, rough stuff. You know, those bad chills, headache, fatigue, and then some of that muscle and joint pain. Some of the later symptoms of Lyme would be like joint swelling, facial palsy, nerve pain, numbness, tingling in the hands and feet, those kind of things. So symptoms can start as early as 3 days after a tick bite and then up to 30 days after. So if you know that you've been bit, really important to mark that date and try to remember when you were bit and monitor for symptoms for about a month because it could take that long for them to develop. They're both typically treated with antibiotics. I think the one they usually use is doxycycline. I think that's usually what's prescribed for both anaplasma and Lyme disease.
And if you have it, sometimes people have it for a long time. You know, it kind of, I don't know if it's dormant, maybe they have symptoms, but I've heard of that as well, where it kind of rears its ugly head after a few years sometimes.
Right? Yeah, some of the cases that we investigate, people will, they'll be tested for it much later than when they were bit, and then we'll do our investigation or ask them questions, and they won't have a known tick bite or tick encounter recently, but it was from a while back. So yeah, I think that is reported sometimes.
What should you do if you are bit? And let's get into maybe some tick removal tips.
Yeah, for sure. There's some things that I want to say not to do that I think were kind of old methods that have been recommended over the years. But I guess just to preface, the first thing you should do is just remove the tick as soon as possible. So that's the kind of through line message for removal, is just get them out of your skin as quickly as possible. But some methods that we should avoid would be things like using heat to remove the tick. So some people will say, you know, get a match and try to get it to like back out of your skin. Some other ones that have been brought up, like nail polish. But I think the whole point of that is to try to get them to back out. The most effective way is to take a tweezers, or you could even use your fingertips with a tissue, but you want to pinch as close to the skin as you can to where the tick is. So you want to get right up to your skin. And then once you have a good pinch, pull upward with a steady pulling force in one swift motion. You don't want to leave the tick in your skin any longer than you have to. So most important is just remove the tick as soon as possible. We kind of mentioned this before, not all of them carry disease. So once you've been bitten, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be infected with a tick-borne disease, but you don't always have to see your doctor either, but it can be helpful in some cases. So I think if you notice that you've been bit, monitor for symptoms. And then if those symptoms come up, then you can reach out to your provider at that time.
You brought along a Stay Tick-Free in Richland County bag here, a little tick removal kit.
Yeah.
There's a lot of neat stuff in here, including, it looks like a spy glass.
We have the magnifying glass in those. Those ones have a metal, kind of a fine tip tweezers in there as well.
Oh, yes.
So if you came to the Living 50 Plus Senior Expo back in April, we were distributing those there. We'll use them for some other outreach events too later this year. So We've given them out in years past as well, but this year we had some extra funding through a grant to be able to kind of beef those up a little bit and have some extra goodies in there. So,
and you have a bag or bags here in case you want to collect that tick and bring it into your provider, right?
Yeah, so that's actually a good point to bring up is the testing. So sometimes people will they want to test the tick, which is a totally logical avenue to explore in terms of, you know, it's something you can do. And if you have the tick and want to know that there, if it has disease or not, a totally logical response, but it's generally not recommended to have them tested, or at least not to base treatment decisions on that tick test. So laboratories that do the tick testing, they're not required to have the high standards of quality control used by like diagnostic clinics. So those results shouldn't be used for treatment decisions. If you have positive results that show that the tick contains a disease-causing organism, that doesn't necessarily mean that you've been infected. So like we mentioned, if you remove it promptly, you know, it doesn't mean that just because it has Lyme disease that you're going to get it, especially if you removed it quickly. If you get negative results, though, then that can lead sometimes to false assurance. If maybe you found one on your leg and you pulled that one, you send it in for testing, it's negative, but meanwhile, you had a tick in the nymph life stage behind your ear that you didn't know about, and that transmitted Lyme. You wouldn't want to be like, "Oh, the one I found, I'm good. It's negative. I'm not going to go into my doctor." So, if you've been infected, you'll probably develop symptoms before the results are available too. But if you do become ill, you should not wait for the tick testing results to begin appropriate treatment. So, really, just monitoring for those signs and symptoms, and then reaching out to your provider. If you develop any of those signs or symptoms.
Is Lyme disease tough to get rid of?
I think if you get it, initiate the treatment, and not, let it go a long time, I believe the antibiotics are pretty effective at clearing that.
I've heard stories, though, and I think there's a celebrity or two that have had just terrible issues with it where they're sick for a long time.
Yeah, I think I've heard too of just dealing with antibiotics. It's not fun either. So yeah, it's definitely something to monitor. I think doing the tick prevention measures, if you identify a tick and monitor for symptoms, then you can initiate that treatment at the appropriate time and hopefully avoid some of those longer term impacts.
How do I avoid if I want to take a little stroll in the woods, tuck my pants in my socks, or you have some tips, Evan?
Yeah, that's a good one. One of the best is just tick checks. So doing tick checks on yourself, on your animals, they'll find those kind of hard to see places and kind of embed there, like behind the knees, behind your ears, like along your waistband. So making sure you check all those places, as well as checking your pets thoroughly as well. I think about, if you're out for a hike, doing a quick scan before you get in your car, and then maybe even before you go into your house, if you have somebody with you that's hiking, they could check over your back and some of those harder to see places kind of right on the spot. But if you do find them, remove them immediately. And that's one of the best parts about the tick check, is that you would find them before they would transmit any disease. You mentioned the clothing aspect. So wearing light colored clothing and then tucking those, your pants into your socks, your shirt into your pants. All those things can be helpful. I do always mention though, that if it's like a 90 or 100 degree day and you're just in your yard doing some yard work, I wouldn't say that all those steps are necessary with the clothing. But if for example, you were going to go into some deep grass to go fishing or something, then I would definitely recommend, making sure you have long sleeves on, your skin's mostly covered, and then tucking those areas in so that the ticks can't get to your direct skin. Using repellents is a great prevention measure. So if it has 20% DEET, that can be helpful. And then another product is permethrin, which you can treat your clothing with. And then that lasts longer. You don't have to apply it every time you go outside. And then just some other measures, walking in the center of trails. So if you're out with, your dog or something, and you're not trying to go into tall grass or tick environments, then just trying to stay in the trail. Bathing or showering after being outdoors is another great measure. Let's say you did the tick check and maybe you missed one that was in your scalp, and then you go to take a shower within, 2 hours of being outside, you'll probably remove any ticks that you may have missed during the tick check. The last prevention measure I just want to mention is creating a tick safe zone in your environment. So just making sure that you keep up with your yard work, essentially. If you can, create a 3-foot barrier between the woods and your yard with like gravel or like a wall, things like that can be helpful. And then, mowing your lawn often, kind of just mentioned yard work, keeping up with that, keeping areas where people sit like tables, swing sets, other play equipment, keeping that more in the middle of your yard or closer to your home than the wood line. And then trying to keep deer out. So that's just a natural way to prevent ticks from being in your yard. So don't feed deer. If you can keep barriers around your yard from them to keep them from coming in, that can be helpful. And then stacking wood in dry areas that are away from your home, because I think mice can be a they can carry ticks into your yard as well. And if you have it in the, if mice get into the wood pile, that can be another way as well.
If you're out and you're hiking, maybe taking a shower right away is a good idea, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I try to, when I go play disc golf, I try to do that. Like, even if I'm not, you know, super sweaty, just trying to make sure that I'm, you know, checking and doing that. And tucking your shirt into your pants can be really helpful too. One of the ticks I found last year, I was wearing a tank top and I was kind of fanning it because I was sweating. And I looked down into my shirt and I saw one crawling up on my abdomen. So if I had my shirt tucked in, I don't think it would have got that far and I probably would have saw it on my shirt. So all those measures together can be really helpful, but I think the tick checks and the showering after being outdoors are a couple great ones, and not forgetting to check your pets as well.
If you have high water pants like me, though, and your socks aren't long enough, it's kind of a challenge sometimes.
Yeah, you get some tall socks and try to tuck them in there.
Pull them up, yeah.
Try your best.
Do whatever you can.
Yeah, for sure.
Evan Ewing is our guest here from Public Health, and we'll have more coming up here as we talk about this being Lyme Disease Awareness Month. Also, it's Mental Health Awareness Month, and we'll talk more about that when we return with more on The Morning Show. Evan Ewing is our guest from Public Health with Richland County Human Services, Health and Human Services, talking about the many things, preventions we can do. We've talked a little bit about ticks. I think you were at the Lloyd Men's Shed
for
the ADRC, and you presented there as well.
Yeah, that's part of, I wanted to talk about some of our, we applied for a grant called the Environmental Public Health Tracking Grant. So the state of Wisconsin has a data set, and you can apply for a mini grant through them to receive some money to focus on an area that is of need in your community. So within our community, Lyme disease is pretty high. Some of our efforts where we're using that grant money include posting tick bite prevention signage. So if you go, I think we have 6 signs up currently. There's one at the Ash Creek Forest Trailhead, the Steamboat Rock Boat Landing off Highway 80 North. There's a couple over near Viola in some fishery areas. One at Simons at the trailhead there for the trails behind Simons. And then finally one at the Pine River Trail entrance in Lone Rock. So 4 of those signs have a repellent wipe holder attached to them. And so part of our effort there was to provide hikers with a single-use repellent wipe packet for their hike if they forgot repellent. And those do have a QR code on them. So if people want to learn more about ticks, they can scan that. And my phone number for my office is also on there as well. So if they're all gone, people can contact me and we can supply some more there. Another fun strategy that we're implementing is providing Lego tick presentations and kind of a Lego building event for kiddos in some of our surrounding schools. So starting next week, I'll be visiting Ithaca, and then the week after Weston and the I Thrive School in Rockbridge. And then finally, I believe St. Mary's, kind of that second to last week of May. And so really just providing kiddos an opportunity to build a Lego tick while learning more about ticks in kind of a fun and interactive way. The UW-Madison Midwest Center of Excellence on Vector-Borne Disease, they provide a list of parts and then an instruction manual. And so we were able to order enough parts for 60 Lego tick kits. So each kid will get to take one of those Lego ticks home with them, which is really cool. They're kind of big. I mean, bigger than what you would think for the tick. And it's really cool how that UW-Madison program put together the parts list for them. And so the colors match as well. And I think it'll be a fun way to engage with kiddos. Another item that we purchased with the grant was those tick removal kits. So in previous years, we haven't had the funding to get the metal tweezers. So our kits this year, we went through a vendor called Tick Tweezers and ordered some nice branded tick removal kits that have the metal tweezers, magnifying glass. There's Band-Aids in there, alcohol wipes, and then a tick ID card. So they have a little clip on them, and you can clip them onto your bag if you go fishing or hiking, which is kind of cool. Ideally, you wouldn't want to get to that point where you need to use it, but and then we've also done a lot of messaging and articles, and then you mentioned the Men's Shed. I was able to go out there and present to them. I was also one of the seminar speakers at the Living 50 Plus Expo at the community center earlier in April. So trying to just get out in the community and share the messaging, and trying to get out into rural portions of the county as well, and not leaving out some of those schools in those more rural portions. So trying to share as much information as we can and outreach on these tick bite prevention measures that people can take.
Transitioning, May is also Mental Health Awareness Month.
Evan. Yeah, it's another big observance for us in public health. So within our community health improvement plan, mental health is one of our priority areas. So that's why, just for context, why public health is involved in mental health promotion. Just some general stats. 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. have a mental illness, which I think is far more common than people believe. I think 1 in 10 have diabetes. So just kind of for context, actually more common to have a mental illness. And 1 in 3 U.S. adults report experiencing loneliness, which can have some detrimental impacts on our mental health. You know, there's been a link between loneliness and depression and anxiety. So really this month is just a month to highlight mental health and encourage community members to show each other grace when it comes to mental health, understanding where you can access resources, how you can get screened for your mental health, and also a time to acknowledge professionals who work in the mental health field too. So yeah, it's Mental Health Month. We're doing a lot of stuff within our CHIP mental health work group. So we partner up with RCCFAC, which is the Richland County Children and Family Advocacy Council. I don't know if you remember last year, we were giving out those Mental Health Matters window clings. So you may still see some of those up around town. We're not doing that specifically this year, but our focus is more on promoting mental health screening. So through screening, you can recognize if you're experiencing signs or symptoms of a mental health challenge or illness, and then you can take appropriate follow-up actions. So there's a great resource on the Mental Health America website where a user can select from a whole variety of mental health assessments and screenings. And at the end, it provides you some direction regarding your results. So in terms of accessing help or resources, depending on what your assessment results are. We will have some small wallet-sized cards that will be included in each of the Walk with Grace or Race for Grace swag bags. So we partnered up with them this year to have those included in the participant bags. There's a QR code on them that'll take people to that web resource where they can take a free mental health test. So we're really trying to encourage that people take those tests. Also seeing your medical provider, they can do a screening for you there too and direct you in the right way in terms of, resources and help. And then we're also offering the Make It Okay presentations, which I think I've talked about before on here, the stigma reduction training. So if you have a business and you want to provide that for your staff, just contact me. I'm happy to provide that training for free for you. Especially if your business is customer facing. So trying to address mental health stigma and create a more positive culture around mental health in Richland County. So if you have a business and you're interested in that, feel free to let me know and I'd be happy to come out and do that.
We had programs on earlier this week especially talking about those over 60 and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned loneliness. That's a real key thing. And there are so many social things that we can get out and do if we just have the gumption to get up and get off the couch, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. That's one thing I wanted to talk about is what you can do as a listener for Mental Health Month. And one of those things is just get connected if you're lonely. So I have in my notes here, one of the things about our community that's great is there are so many options to connect with others. One recommendation would be to just look through the community calendar and try attending an event. Another is bonding over similar hobbies too. So I mentioned I play disc golf. I know there's a group, RAD, I think, Richland Area Disc Golf. So whatever your hobby is, there may be a group that you can connect with around that and build some social connection that way. Exercising with others can be another great way to connect. So I know Simon's, they have in the winter the open gym in the gymnasium there where you can go. You can walk with others and talk that way. And I think they offer a lot of classes as well. Another step that I think that kind of goes under the radar is volunteering. So that can be another great way to meet people too. so we're designed to be connected, and I think having that social interaction is really important to improve mental health and get out there. So if you're on the fence about attending an event, I highly recommend just going to one or checking out the things that are going on in the community. I know the farmer's market will be starting up soon as well. So even, just getting out, you can connect with people there. So there's a lot of opportunities, I think, especially now with it being nicer weather outside.
Yes, I believe next week, actually, I think Ricky Grunenberg is going to be on with us talking about that. So I think it's next Wednesday is the first outdoor farmer's market. But yeah, lots of things. And I think those of us maybe that are involved in maybe a civic group or, you know, volunteer, invite a friend that you think could use a little bit of lift, because sometimes you're hesitant to go on your own to those kind of things.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, just one other person, you go and you can meet new people. And I think bonding over shared interests is, you know, a great way to get connected with people. And even if it's not part of a formal group, maybe just, you know, getting together with a couple other people that have a shared interest can be another great way to connect. I just want to kind of highlight some of the things that people can do in terms of stigma. So stigma was identified as a causal factor for poor mental health in Richland County. So a reason why people reported poor mental health. And just to define it, it's a set of negative beliefs or attitudes about a topic. In this case, that's mental health. And that stigma can deter people from accessing services and the care they need. And then that can make people feel isolated. so they don't want to go seek out the help they need. A question I often ask during those Make It Okay presentations is, would you feel comfortable using or accessing mental health services in Richland County? And if their answer is no, out of, you know, fear for what people might think or say, then I think that's a prime example that stigma is present in our community. One way that you can reduce that, though, is if somebody opens up to you about their mental health, you can try to create a caring and open space for them, just letting them know that you're there for them. You can offer to help. You can ask questions like, do you want to talk about it? Let them know that you're there to listen and try to, you know, keep that conversation going, keep it open. Being supportive instead of dismissive. We want to avoid dismissing what they're saying. For example, saying things like, we all have those days, or it could be worse, you know, really minimizing what they're going through. You don't want to do that. And then you could check in with friends, family, loved ones, and just see how they're doing. So kind of made me think of it when you mentioned, you know, reaching out to somebody to try to get out to an event. Just trying to check in and connect with those people in your lives can be helpful for their mental health, and just trying to be supportive, essentially.
We're all kind of the weather kind of leads us. And I think now that it's better weather, we can get out there, hopefully someday, open up all the windows and consistently. But I mean, that does have a factor, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think I mentioned the business aspect as well. I know, you know, obviously outside of our work time, there's, you know, a lot of opportunities to connect, but I think where you work, you know, obviously you spend a lot of time there. So that does play a role as well. So I mentioned, if you are a business and you're interested in offering that training, let us know. But also if you're an employer or an employee, you can ask your employer if they provide an employee assistance program, which is built in. Usually it's a few counseling sessions that are built into your benefits if they have it. If they don't have an EAP, you could reach out to me and I can provide them with resources. So we developed a mental health toolkit for businesses. If they don't have an EAP, we can provide that to them. It has QR codes for resources to try to make a more mental health friendly workplace. And then there's also resources for the employees in that as well. So just want to mention that too, that where you work and that that culture at your workplace plays a factor as well. So if your employer is really supportive of mental health, I think that's going to shift that culture a little bit. No matter where you go in Richland County, hopefully, you know, we would love to get to a point where all the businesses and organizations are very mental health friendly and that stigma is reduced. So that's really a lot of what we're working on within our work group.
Evan, this time of year too, I think we talked about this maybe the last time you were on, but animal bites some things about that. Any updates that you can give us?
Yeah, I mean, this time of year, usually people are more active outdoors with their animals. So just by a product of that, you're going to have maybe a more increased likelihood of bites occurring. So I just want to recommend that people be proactive owners. So if you see kids that are around your animal and they don't know your animal, trying to you know, contain your animal so it doesn't bite them. If you're a parent and you have kids, try not to just let your kid go up and pet random animals, making sure that you ask the other owner for permission to pet. Those kind of things can be helpful. If you're an animal owner, really important to keep your animal current for its rabies vaccine. So some vaccines are 1 year and I think some are 3 years. So if you're listening right now and you're not sure, be sure to check up, maybe check in with your vet, make sure that your animal is current, because no matter how proactive of an owner you are or, you know, want to be those things, bites can still occur. And if it does occur and your animal is not current for its rabies vaccine, by the rabies control law, you would have to board your animal in a quarantine facility and have your vet checks done. And that can be really costly. So just want to mention that by the rabies control law, if you do receive an animal bite order and your animal is current for rabies vaccine, you will still have to have vet checks done. So they're done on typically within 24 hours of the bite at day 10 and then one other day in between. And that's to assess for rabies. So that is done no matter what. Once we receive a bite order, we have to enforce that rabies control law. So really want to just encourage people to be proactive owners and get their animals up to date for their rabies vaccine. So those are the best things that you can do, trying to minimize bites. But even the best owners, bites can still occur. So just wanted to share some of that information.
How does Health and Human Services get involved in a case like that?
So the by law, the anytime that somebody, let's say I was bit by my own animal and I needed stitches and I went to the hospital, the way that the law is, the hospital would have to report that an animal bite occurred to law enforcement, and then they would come up and issue an animal bite order. And essentially it's agreeing that you're going to follow rabies control law. And then that gets reported to us in public health. And then we reach out to the animal owner to make sure that their animal is getting assessed for rabies. And then we reach out to the animal bite victim as well to ensure that, they have information they need about rabies and rabies prevention. So that's kind of how that process works typically. Sometimes bites are reported to us in other ways, but typically it's if somebody seeks treatment, then they're it's by law reported to law enforcement and then to us.
Indeed. Sometimes, dogs, maybe they'll get loose by no fault of the owner, maybe whatever. But for walkers and bikers and runners, it's a real concern.
Yeah, for sure. I think, it just kind of goes back to that being a proactive owner. Sometimes, accidents, mistakes happen, and it's unfortunate it's just unfortunate for everybody. But once we receive the animal bite order in public health, we have to follow up on it. Even if it's a low risk scenario for rabies, we can't make the order go away once we receive it. So, you'll likely, if you have an order and sign it, you're going to hear from us in public health, and we'll try to ensure that those vet checks are done. And then if your animal is not up to date for rabies, then we'll have to try to figure out where you're going to isolate that animal at a quarantine facility and get those checks done.
Anything else you want to discuss this month, Evan? We've covered a lot of topics.
No, I think that's pretty much it. Just be on the lookout for some of our materials, like the tick removal kits. We'll be likely out at the National Night Out later in August. And then, like I mentioned, in the schools, so if your kiddo comes home with a Lego tick, you'll know the kind of more of the information behind that. But just make sure you're checking for ticks out there. And, this month is a great time to complete one of those free mental health assessments as well. And then if you're a business or an organization that wants that free mental health training for stigma reduction, feel free to reach out to me. You can, my number is 608-649-5965, and that'll go right to my office, and we can talk about how I can provide that for your business or your organization.
What's a typical day like for you? I mean, you've got a lot of different hats to wear.
It depends. I think a lot of the stuff is reacting to what we get. So if it's an animal bite or a communicable disease case that comes our way, then we'll have to respond to those. But I primarily am responsible for our implementation of our community health improvement plan. So doing a lot of planning for community outreach, those kind of things surrounding substance misuse and mental health. I also am responsible for our maternal and child health objective, which is adolescent mental health. So I know I was on in March talking about the community, creating community connections, our education series. We actually just wrapped that up earlier this week on Monday. So those take up quite a bit of time. And then the tick bite prevention work, that grant implementation started in, I believe, October, and it ends in July. So throughout this whole time, I've been doing a lot of outreach and education on tick bite prevention, Lyme disease prevention. Yeah, so those are kind of outside projects that are outside of the essential services. So the communicable disease follow-up, environmental health hazard, home visits, those are more essential. And then, the communicable disease, I mentioned that. So a lot of the essential services and then these things kind of extra on top of that. So it's been good, though. I love it.
Not that we can't get it, but I'm surely glad that we're out of, because it seemed like we had so much flu and norovirus and all kinds of stuff, crud going around, and hopefully we get past that. We're getting into some better weather too.
Yeah, I think right now the common cold, I think, is what's present. The main three, COVID, RSV, and flu, I think, are all trending down or decreasing to pretty low levels. So the cold and just a common cold, I think, is what's circulating most right now, but it's probably at low levels as well.
Good. Good to hear. Yeah. We'll come back and talk a little bit later. Maybe this summer we'll have some more topics to talk about.
So. Yeah, no, that'd be great.
In the meantime, try to avoid those ticks.
And for sure.
If you do, kind of
remove them right away.
Remove them right away, right? Or take a shower. That's what we've learned today on the morning show.
Thanks, Phil.
Evan Ewing joining us, public health specialist with Richland County Health and Human Services.